It's 8 o'clock.
8 a.m.
And 8 a.m. and we're recording. Okay, so good morning. See Mr. Janko and myself here. I call the meeting to order. And item 2, comments from the public.
And we have Mr. Jeff.
Hi, Jeff Pearson, Rancho North, Marriott Equestrian Center, as the case may be. Let's see. Looking at the agenda, I don't see anything on here. And I sent an email to the district about this. Curious what happened with the Water Vision Working Group Matrix update. That looking at the June 10th, 2026 Improvements Committee minutes was due this month. We were going to have that discussion. We were going to condense it and have the discussion, and I talked to Tom and other people, and nothing. So, it seems like we've just been relegated to obscurity there. I hope that's not the case. We spent a lot of time and effort on that, as you might well imagine, and so did you. A week, I think. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
Very fine.
A week trying to condense that matrix, and I'd sure like all of that work and effort not to be lost to the ether. So curious why that didn't make it on the agenda, Director Geer. I'm also wondering how the search for the new tank is going. Since that's an improvements sort of thing, and you had indicated at a board meeting, Director Geer, that you were taking it upon yourself with, I'm not sure who else, to conduct the search for the new tank location. I'm wondering how that's going. We're still, Rancho North, we're happy to have discussions. A little surprised we haven't heard anything from you yet. It seemed to be a pressing matter. It's been pressing for the district for years and currently got the development implications. And maybe this is for the full board, I don't know. How is it going? How are the questions going that we had posed for the water attorney? Again, I heard nothing. And considering from Rancho North perspective, the positive indications for water development on lands that there are ours or associated, I'm a little surprised that we haven't heard anything from any district attorneys about that. I'm wondering if you might be able to bring us up to speed on that, or perhaps redirect me from where I can go ask the question. Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else, Diane?
That is it.
Okay.
I guess we're going to ignore those comments and not respond to them, but my response is, when I got the draft of the Improvements Committee agenda, there was a Part H which called for Working Vision Group update, and I discussion item update, Lisa Madhouse and Jim Farrell discussion on IWMP draft. I assume that this was what we were going to talk about this morning. I'm as surprised as you that when I got the final agenda for the Improvements Committee, those two items were taken off. I'm looking for a response on how that happened, why it happened, why are we not pursuing these items. I have a question also.
Yeah, thank you. And I had hoped for the answer too, and I reached out to the district, but I've heard nothing also. Anything?
No. Okay, item number 3A.
Before we leave the subject, Amelia, you...
I will comment on Lisa.
Who put the agendas together and how...
Well, Diane and
why
and I,
did they change?
Diane and I put the agendas together, and then we review it with the committee chair or the board president, right, if it's a board meeting, and then they have final say. For Lisa Mattis, there's no update, so that's why it's not on there. There's no update. They haven't spoken. Their wires are getting crossed, right? And for Water Vision Matrix, I think we are going to have that looked at by the board, Bill? I don't...
The board... Bill was very adamant that this is not a water group thing, that this is an improvements committee thing. And so here we are at the improvements committee, and we're so, not...
So,
we're,
Randy,
we're,
I
mean, kicking the ball down.
Since you're asking, Randy, like Amelia said, Jim and Lisa didn't meet. That's why they aren't on there. We're still trying to figure out if they're going to be able to do anything. And I talked to Jim a couple days ago, and he said, no, Lisa hasn't really been able to answer. So, and I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. I think you said it wouldn't go anywhere, and I think that you were probably right. As far as the working group, there was going to be... I can't remember who is going to condense it, but I haven't seen anything since that time.
Have you gotten that? I thought you were going to get something from Tom.
We were going to get emails, right? Y'all were going to help condense.
See Tom.
And I still have my side to do and haven't been able to get to it, so I do apologize.
Well, yeah, I've talked to Tom about this, and he hasn't heard anything from the district either.
So, Jeff, where's Tom?
Where is Tom?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't keep Tom's schedule.
Well, and we don't direct his work. So if Tom
this is
gonna,
a this is a district matter.
If Tom was going to do something and get it to Diane, and then she was going to do something,
that
fell through the cracks.
No, that's not true. Tom didn't make that commitment. I talked to him, and it's certainly not in the minutes.
So that's.
So okay. It's up to us to run the...
No, but see, this is specifically why I think that the Water Vision Group needs to be a part of the Improvements Committee so we can manage the interactions. And it's you're pointing fingers and we're saying it wasn't us, and it's like, yeah, it fell through the cracks because nobody's in charge. So
sir,
there you go.
It's up to the Improvements Committee to direct. That's what you wanted.
Okay.
So we made those observations at the last Improvements Committee meeting, they were reported to the board. It's in the minutes. And I talked, and I know myself and Mr. Shuchak were both happy to help. But again, you wanted to be able to direct, so we're waiting. I would have expected at least a call, an email, anything. Happy to do it, happy to help, always have been. We heard nothing, nothing. Which seems to me about right.
Okay, RMCC Club storm drain issues.
I'm going to go ahead and let Corey talk about these. We're going to separate the four storm drains and the storm drain one fairway. So we're going to make those two separate issues. And Corey is here to speak on those two items.
So I've been doing a lot of digging, and I came across a June 1988 master storm drainage and flood control master plan that shows Rancho Country Club North 14, North 17, North 8, and North 3 and South 1 lines are not CSD district responsibility.
Shall we share that map with the audience?
Yeah, we can bring it up now. I would have shared it in the packet, but I literally just found this map this morning, digging through archives.
And then we will post this on the internet.
Sorry.
So I think make it bigger, and or if you want to come closer, you can see that the... and then you can zoom in when it gets...
So I highlighted sections in green that are RMCC pipelines, and pink are channels, or ditches, if you will, that run around.
So let's slow down. This is the North 14. This is clearly a non-CSD pipe, a drainage pipe. North 17 is again clearly a non-CSD drainage pipe. Okay, go down. Oh, and here's one that looks like it's a drainage channel.
But there's actually a pipe in place now, so...
Oh, so the difference between a channel and a pipe is?
Open channel versus actually pipe in the ground.
And an open channel is easy for us to go and take care of. We just weed eat it and get the whatever debris is in there.
We go cut the weeds out.
Versus a pipe that...
has collapsed and plugged the line now.
All right. So For this section, is it the green section or the pink section? It's the green section.
The pink section is actually where a pipe has been placed and has collapsed.
Okay. And then I've taken the liberty of looking back at the drainage code, and it says that in order for the district to take responsibility for a drainage pipe, there are permits, there are inspections, and we accept that pipe. And since we don't have any documentation of any of that, we have to assume that this is not a pipe that we said, yeah, that's our pipe, we'll take it. We didn't put it in. We didn't inspect it. We didn't accept it. It's not ours. So we'll move on to the North 8 hole. Are we having a problem in the green or the pink?
Green sections collapse and failed.
Okay, and the green, again, we can see that's a non-CSD pipe. I don't know if that's North 8 too.
That was actually highlighted that one on accident. That one's not failed yet.
Okay. And then North 3 is a non-CSD pipe. So
if you scroll down further, it'll show South 1. There's not supposed to be a pipe there. That's supposed to be open water watershed surface flow.
Oh, so the water just flows over the grass.
Correct. But there's a pipe there as well with a sinkhole in it now, too.
And at some point between 1988 and 2026, somebody... not CSD, not a CSD sanctioned pipe or accepted or approved pipe, was placed in there, and so the district is not responsible for those drainage pipes.
Correct.
So I know a couple of months ago at the board meeting, we had a discussion about CSD taking over all the storm drains. It's my understanding that it wasn't voted on and approved by the board. It was just talked about. I want to recommend that we as a district do not take on these liabilities for several reasons. One, that's a private entity. It's not ours. That the country club doesn't belong to CSD. Two, there is no documentation stating that we've accepted those in any way, shape, or form. And the cost of repairing those are going to be expensive. Now, once these items are repaired and approved, and if that's a conversation that the board wants to have with the country club or the owner of the property, then that's one thing. But we should not be financially responsible to repair these. It's not our property. It's not our either. It's not ours in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So we as staff recommend that we don't move forward with these, and that we're not responsible to repair these. And once they're repaired, if that conversation wants to be had, that's a different story.
Yeah.
So we wanted to bring this to your attention, and if this needs to go to the board for further discussion, we can go ahead and talk about it at the board meeting next week.
Okay, so Travis, let's back up one second. So here we have this item on the agenda. Did someone request that we repair these, or did we just find them in a failed state, or what is driving the train here?
We were recently notified by the country club in the last couple months about these sinkholes appearing, And we've been investigating the different sinkholes and locations and pipes and whether they're ours or not. Yeah. And basically, we were told they're ours. Some of them we were told just opened up. And Google Images, it shows some been opened up for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So before this becomes a shouting match between the two entities, I'm just using that as a... But before this becomes a main discussion before the two entities, this information we felt was prudent to bring to you, to bring to the committee so you're aware of it, and then to also bring to the board so that everyone is aware of it and you have the information that we currently have if a discussion is needed.
So we just found this map. What's in the title block? Is it?
Oh, go down.
Who?
So.
This is by.
Over on the right, usually.
This is the Storm Drainage and Flood Control Master Plan, June 1988, by Giberson and Associates.
And who? And Rancho Myriad. Oh, it's our map. We had it done. Is it an attachment to another document, or was this somehow recorded somewhere, or?
It's part of the master plan from that time.
It just kind of came out of somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So we've been... Corey has been doing an in-depth deep dive on all these storm drains since these things have come up. And I know Corey was working on this till late last night. And so as he's doing his deep dive into things, these type of things are popping up. One of the things is... you know, we have our agenda set, you know, 3-4 days before, but he's still on a daily basis looking for things. And as these come up, you know, whether it proves our story or denies our story, we're just providing this information. Sure. So when a decision is made by the board, an educated decision can be made. For the district to go, hey, we're just going to arbitrarily take responsibility for all drainage on the country club, I don't think that is a prudent thing to do. Yes, there are drainages that are our responsibility, and we'll do them. We'll take care of them. Don't have a problem with that. It's just not, if it doesn't belong to us and there is no viable paperwork or documentation that states it's ours, then we shouldn't be financially responsible to take care of them. That's the opinion of staff.
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, I say thank you to Corey. I think you're doing a great job of discovery here. And we do need to find all documents, whether they support us owning it or the club owning it, or us owning it or us not owning it. I think it's important we find all the documents. Another step we could take would be to reach out to the country club and see if they could provide any documents that helped shed light on this subject. Because like you said, Travis, as far as taking on these tasks, I mean, the last culvert we did, it was like over $100,000, and it was like, what, 100 feet long? I mean, that simple math is like $1,000 a linear foot. So we can't afford to just send the bill to the residents for, you know, you got, you know, $300,000-$400,000. We can't just say, oh yeah, thanks. So thanks for working on this. And this is a process. It's not a one day thing. Certainly you can give us an update next month, and maybe if the country club is adamant, they'll provide their set of documents and beliefs, and we can hash it out more next month.
Additionally, I'd like to comment on Randy's question. This is a document that was prepared June 10th, 1988, Storm Drainage and Flood Control Master Plan, Gibbertson Associates, and it was accepted by the board at the June 15th meeting. So the board did look at this and accept it. And I'm not saying that we have, if we have a complete set of documents, easements, you know, plans, as-builts, et cetera, we, Corey and I, have yet to uncover them. So if the country club has any supporting document that will help us understand that we are responsible for these drains, then we'll have that conversation.
Did we agree that North 14 was our responsibility?
So I've yet to find any easement for North 14, but at the board direction, that has been replaced and done.
Mm-hmm. But per this drawing, should we have taken responsibility?
No.
For North 14?
No.
I agree with Bill. This is a process, and at some point, we're going to have to get the attorneys involved as to what all this means legally, right?
Okay.
But yeah, great job of digging this out.
So is this, do we just want to investigate further and bring to the improvements committee?
Yeah.
And okay.
That would be my direction, is that Corey and Travis and Amelia continue their discovery and to include dialogue with the country club so that we don't leave them in the dark and they don't have an opportunity, you know, before, they need to have an opportunity well before a board meeting to present.
That's
anything
fine.
They have.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
So then item B, this was, I'll let Corey talk about this one. This is a separate sinkhole issue that he had conversations with Caltrans on.
So item B is South 1 Fairway Sinkhole. It's a 20-inch CMP culvert running from Jackson to the river, directly to, which creates a concern for hazards going into the watershed, water flows directly into the river. Also being it goes straight from Jackson, my concern was this should not be CSDs, it should be Caltrans. So I contacted Caltrans and met them on site. They brought out their plans and development and show as our plans do that this was a watershed only. And that at some point the country club must have piped it and they're not responsible for it, neither are we at this time. But the concern being is because it goes directly into the river, I've reached out. My understanding is we have to note it on our MS4 permit and have it tested as an additional outfall at additional cost to the district, being that it goes directly into the river. So I'm trying to get verification on that at this time and see what the cost will be incurred on that as well. I have yet to get that email response back for that.
So, you're saying that since it's a culvert, since it's a pipe and not a culvert, that we have to test it? And
any outfalls to the river are to be tested on an annual basis.
Can you give me a definition of outfall?
Any pipe going directly into the river.
Okay.
So then we have to test that.
So then even though Caltrans plans show that it's just a ditch, which again gives the drainage water the chance to leach out into the soil any bad stuff that might be coming off the road. And since at some point since Caltrans plans were put into place and accepted, somebody has put a pipe in there. And we have no knowledge of this pipe rate being placed in there. So, okay, but we still have to add that on to our inspections for our MS4 permit.
I'm double checking that, because my understanding is as long as it's within our district boundaries and it is an outfall to the river, my understanding is it is to be on our MS4 permit and is to be inspected, whether it's private or ours. So that's why I'm checking now, just to double confirm and get a cost on that inspection.
We as a district don't want to touch this in any way, shape, or form. The water coming from anything that comes from
hold on, Travis. Sir, can you fill out a comment card for us, please?
Yeah.
We're willing to let you speak.
The biggest concern is pollutants aren't being filtered out across the green belt, if you will, and they're being direct shuttled to the...
What's the date on the plans? When was their project done?
Caltrans?
Yeah.
So really... Like 1951 or something, 1951.
Before the golf course existed.
Yes.
So really, I mean, anyone who modifies the land, and Joe, you may deal with this some, if somebody modifies the land so that it goes into the river, then we should have some jurisdiction over it and some say, because we're going to end up regulating it and paying for that regulation. Is that accurate, do you think?
When it goes through private, we actually can bill the private owners for that regulation that we have to maintain at that location. And that's where our 88 plans actually show it still is a watershed, agreeing with Caltrans 1950 plan.
What's the ballpark cost of adding that additional site for monitoring?
I have yet to get that response back yet.
A couple thousand a year? Ten? Don't know.
We go through Stratus Engineering. They do all of our MS4 testing and submitting paperwork, documentation, and all of our fog inspection. So we're waiting to find out what it would cost to add that onto it.
What do we pay them a year, Travis?
I'd have to look it up, but I think we pay them $20,000-$25,000 for all of our fog inspection, MS4, and reporting, and then that I can find a because we just renewed with them for we renew with them annually, and
wasn't
so,
that last month that we did
it was a couple months couple ago months. Yeah, right. that and we brought that. They are registered with the state as our reporters and stuff. So, okay. I think Corey's got something here.
Yeah, we currently show 7 outfalls, so it'd bring it to 8.
Okay. So, is that it, Corey?
Sorry?
Are you done? Is that
so 7 outfalls, but only one that comes from the highway, or only one that crosses over the...
The 7 outfalls are what we're currently testing annually.
Okay.
We don't have this one on our test because we didn't know it existed.
Any of them near the highway other than this one?
The airport would be the next closest one to the highway.
So if the airport adds any more, then we should have them talk to us as part of the process if they added any more. Okay. Randy, anything else right now? Okay. All right, sir?
So my name is Eric Dutton. I'm the board president at the Country Club, as well as the general manager. I got invited over here by Travis because there was a meeting going on of some sorts. I didn't really know what I was coming to, but it is interesting. I have been in the middle of most of what's gone on at this point and try to get kept up to speed of what's happening here. My question is specific to this South Number 1 drainage that you're talking about. I'll go back to the records. The records over at the Country Club are all admittedly atrocious. There is just probably like what they've been going through over here, trying to go through, 50 years of documents. Well, at least for the club, over 50 years of documents, and they just haven't had a good filing system or a good process and storage area just to keep maps. I mean, getting a set of as-builts for the building from when it was remodeled 25 years ago is impossible.
Yeah.
So it is tough, and I've been through a lot of documents, and some of them are, good for going to sleep at night, and others you do find little tidbits of information. Specifically on the South Number 1, I'm unaware, obviously I haven't been in the club that long, that a pipe might have been installed. My question specifically is, if it comes off of the state highway, I guess originally it just drained onto the golf course and then ran out to the river, and if that is the case... Then if a rock drainage is put back in, does that suffice to meet the needs of what's going on? Are you only required to monitor the discharge that goes down to the river if it's actually piped to the river? And then back to the original statement, it seems to me it would be a Caltrans responsibility and not CSD or the country clubs if they set the drainage up to run onto our property.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, if these things are failing, if we can reconstruct them in such a way that we avoid regulation, then that, I mean, that might be a tactic.
We're not talking about failing, right? This is just the outfall, and it has to be monitored.
No, it's got a sinkhole.
This one has a sinkole in the southmost.
Well, yeah, on the country club, it's a sinkhole. But on the highway, it's just a matter of slope and drainage that's causing the water to end up on the golf course, right?
It's
Where is the capture point for this?
So because the golf cart path there is high, it doesn't put any water from the highway onto the golf course. Because you have like a berm, if you will, from the cart path currently. And that's where I asked Caltrans, I said, so what happens if the culvert became plugged and it backed up water? Because he was explaining to me it's private property, not ours. And he said, well, then the private owner is responsible for any damage to the road or that flooding from that because the watershed was changed. So that's something where, you know, because we camered that pipe to confirm that the culvert is completely filled in multiple occasions. We had a camera just, you know, we had our crew out here already and already paid them a minimum for another pipe, so we had them check that while they were here. And at that time, we still weren't sure if this was ours or country club.
Okay, so is there a catch basin between the cart path and the highway?
There's just the CMP pipe comes right out the side of the cart path, right at the fence line.
I'm still not getting the picture here.
So there's highway. I wouldn't say there's a basin, just the watershed goes to a 20-inch culvert.
So we have highway, we have cart path. Right? Country club property. How does the water get from this spot to the other side of the cart path to go down the hill?
The CMP, 20-inch CMP. There's 20-inch
pipe that goes under corrugated
metal pipe that's going underneath the cart path, underneath the south
one. Okay, so there's a catch basin someplace between the cart path and the highway.
Well, not necessarily. It's probably just the end of a pipe that collects the water.
Yeah, you just the pipe ends at the fence line.
So if it's blocked off between the cart path and the highway on our side, then the drainage area between the cart path and the highway fills up and it goes over the cart path and runs down the hill. Now, you don't have to monitor it. That's not my problem. It just runs down the hill.
Well, the problem with that is because the cart path was built so high, it won't do that. It'll actually flood back on the road.
Oh,
okay. So it sounds like it's a Caltrans issue.
It's not for Caltrans. So.
If they were here, they'd
I have an email from him. I can forward you.
I don't have any of this information ahead of time, so I'm just going on what I'm hearing today. Obviously, if the pipe was put in later and we did it and it's not right, then that obviously is going to fall back on, I'll make this even better, the owners of the country club. Being we're just tenants, so we can go from there, but no big deal. All right, that was it. That was my question.
Thank you for showing up. It really helps the process.
I definitely want to understand what's going on. I mean, we've got, just like you guys are doing, making a lot of hard decisions, trying to get the most out of the least amount of money. And so working together is definitely a good thing. We do appreciate 14 getting fixed over there. I mean, there has been discussions, and when it comes down to the cost factor of doing those things, and now that you've done one, we definitely have an idea how much it's going to cost to do something like that. Maybe a little cheaper if we can plan ahead on stuff like that, but the discussion was, do we just dig it out and fill it with rock, too, and just create a pathway up through the middle? But then you start looking at liability issues and a lot of other stuff that might crop up from that. But.
And, Eric, I apologize. I didn't have any of this information until, an hour ago. So I would have definitely given you a heads up.
I gathered that from the earlier discussion.
Yeah. We really started digging into this, yesterday afternoon,
And it sounds like that map, if that was in 88, then coincided with the master water plan and the multi-year agreement for reclaimed water and everything. It sounds like everything happened back in 88.
It was a big deal, big year for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. If you don't mind showing your email, I can forward that Caltrans email to you so that we have their plans and everything.
gm@ranchomarietta.cc.com.
And I will send you the water master, storm drainage and flood control master plan from 88.
Yeah, it's probably the one that I already went to sleep on one night a couple weeks ago.
There's only the one.
There's only the one? There's a lot of documents over there in the office.
Well, I'll send it to you and then you can know.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So, item B, Randy, any more comments?
Yeah, I need to understand this a little bit more. I get that we're collecting water off the highway.
Yeah.
It goes into a pipe that goes under the golf cart path, and then where? Is it from there all the way to the river? Is that, you said 24-inch CMP?
So it's, I don't remember the difference off the top of my head. It's over 300 foot of 20-inch CMP that goes from the fence line Murrieta Country Club to the fence line, Murrieta Country Club going
where
up.
Where does it cross the fairway?
To the right, if there's that parking lot by a starter shack, if you there's a the parking lot there, if you go down the cart path there towards the river before it turns, on the right-hand side, there's a sinkhole there.
She's going to pull up the map, maybe okay. Showing it on the map, or do you want GIS?
Parking.
Corey.
GIS or something, probably easier.
Let me get GIS.
Are we on the north side of the river?
The south one.
Parking.
So as soon as you go past the building, you drive past it. There's that golf cart parking. Yeah, golf cart parking.
And it goes under that and then across the fairway.
Looking the way it curves, I think it kind of curves around there.
Okay, so on item B, I would like to continue our discussion. Corey and Travis and Amelia continue to collect data and email the GM at the country club. And additionally, Corey, can you guys please have some in the packet? Can we have both like a Google Earth photo and some photos from the ground so everybody can understand? Because I'm with Randy. I don't really understand the dynamic here.
I mean, I can.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
So next month we'll have a real full understanding. You guys can talk, and then maybe we can have a decision that we, an outcome that we can action.
I don't know. Do you want to get an invitation to that meeting to be here as we discuss it, or is it okay? Yeah.
And I really would like to insist that we offer invitations to everybody who's affected.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
Well, based on Eric's comment, maybe we need to send an invitation to the owner of the property also.
Yeah, that's good. Well, yeah.
But
okay.
I don't know if you represent or you need Tony or...
Sure. All of the above.
I think Jeff's pretty much the man here.
There's a lot of documents. That doesn't stand alone.
We're sure of that.
I think we'd like to see that. Those.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have a document party.
Item C. Dominichelli & Associates task order request for stormwater quality standards preparations. When this initially came up, we wanted to get a standardization that for the district, so we wouldn't just be going off of Sac County. We would have a standardized thing for the district. I have Joe here to discuss this, to answer questions, make any, if changes want to be made or anything, we can do that right now. The initial task order is for $19,092, and I'll let Joe go ahead and speak on that right now.
Okay. Thanks, Travis. So, as the MS4 permit holder, the district is required to look at stormwater quality and do some of the things that we've discussed here, the inspections, and there's a lot of responsibilities with that. And it's also for development review and requirements for facilities that need to be added. And it's pretty extensive nowadays. The state regulations are very large and cumbersome, and even the county, they have a regional manual that it's hundreds of pages of information, guidelines, actual requirements, and different ways to achieve stormwater quality treatment. And what we find is that smaller communities have their own. They're an MS4 small community actual standards and guidelines that you take from the the state as the final overseer, but we're fortunate to have Sac County and also Placer County. And I say Placer County because they're more of a mountain foothill agency that oversees stormwater quality for Placer County. And because some of the stuff in, a lot of it actually, in Sac County is really not applicable here, just due to grades. I mean, they don't like some of the things that we like in water quality, stormwater quality treatment and source controls. And there's just so many things that they get into. I don't think the district needs to adopt pages and pages of features that could be installed out here. And we want to narrow it down to things that make sense for the district. And we have people on staff that design these features and do the calculations for credits for low impact development features to address stormwater quality. There's something called hydro modification. It's like drainage studies, but down to the minute runoff. You don't want to create impacts even in a small storm. So there's things you have to do that are, you really want to guide not only the developers, engineers. We need Corey's crew, you know, to understand if they're going to build these things, what maintenance is required and which ones you want. I mean, we're not going to have them putting things out there that, well, it's less expensive to put this in, but then it's a maintenance headache. So this whole process is explained in the proposal we put together. And we're not trying to create a 100-page document, but some guidelines for the design and for the maintenance of facilities that would go in into new development. And like this, what we just discussed is a good segue, you know. I mean, how do we deal with this pipe at S1? Because it goes into the river, and what can be done that might not be, well, let's tear the pipe up and put a new one in. There might be some other alternatives that are not as costly and that can meet the intentions of the stormwater quality standards for the state and the county. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to research, and we've actually started pulling some of that together, because I'm already getting requests from the development engineers who are going to be looking at all Rancho Marietta North, putting together the reports and the plans, and they have no guidance right now other than some great big pile of documents that give them so many different options. They don't know what to choose, and they don't want to put that together and have to mark it up and send it back to them and say, well, we don't like it. Because right now, the outfalls, Corey mentioned the 7 outfalls that we have right now, they have water quality features, and a lot of them are really old. But, you know, when we have new development that dumps into those, like Riverview, we looked at the outfall and how we could improve on it, and we did a few things there. The new ones might be different. There's a lot of new ideas out there since these outfalls were put in, the existing ones, but there'll be information in there to guide any repairs we want to do to upgrade some of these existing ones also. So that's That's basically what we put together. It's going to, the deliverable will be a guidance technical memo that could turn into a standard, you know, by a board resolution. We can call it whatever we want once we complete it. It could just be stormwater quality standards for Rancho Murrieta. So.
And so to this point, we've just been kind of hodgepodging Sacramento and Placer counties together and letting the developer pick what they like the most. And then the engineer says, that works, that doesn't work, modify this. Is that kind of our tactic so far?
We've had that type of an arrangement where Riverview, for instance, they came up with these grassy swales that come from the development outfall and down into the actual drainage channel or ditch. And those are definitely acceptable by the state, and they're easy to install. I don't know that Corey thinks they're easy to maintain or not, but those are the things that we want to be able to have say at this point. But they are effective, and they're not closed conduit and things that, you know, that are more expensive to maintain and to build. So we have good experience in the design of these. So our crew's going to have the ability to look at the standards that are out there and say, well, this one looks good. And we're going to make a list of things that can be incorporated into the new design. Other places, you know, the big detention basins, there's a water quality feature the outfall provides to not let a lot of flow through at the lower storm events and sediment, as we saw up at residences, a lot of it could get in there.
Right.
At this point, during, you know, the grading, that's going to happen. But once it's completed and the development is complete, you shouldn't see that much.
Yeah. So
removed.
The problem with the retention of water within that large retention basin, you think that will solve itself over time?
It'll definitely be, yes.
It'll be better?
Better by it'll a be, long shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because the bare earth and some of the best management practices, they're called, they're just features to collect sediment traps and fiber rolls and all those things, they work to a certain extent, but we've been after them quite a bit over the last couple of years, you know, to improve on that. The first year was pretty bad. There was a lot of muddy water leaving the site, but not that it caused a lot of problems for residences. It's just a lot of cleanup for the district, and, you know, and so it's gotten better. We didn't have any really major storms last year to create a worse situation. And I think,
but you're right. It's a big issue because, you know, covering the watershed. You know, we can say, oh, we want a big outflow so the retention pond doesn't fill up, but then we just create big problems downstream.
Yeah, so we need to have those facilities, and those are something that will definitely be in the manual on how to design those.
Well, first of all, Joe, thank you. You're the one who kind of saw this need first, is that right? Yeah.
No, I mean,
No, I think it was me who said, wait a second, what are we doing so far?
Yeah. No, we recognize the standards for design for the district. A lot of them are your 1980 vintage, you know,
so
and
there's
they just need updates.
A bigger picture question, Joe. You know, we're not an incorporated city, and it's always surprised me the number of things we don't do. I'm sure that most cities have like a pavement management maintenance plan, the PMMP. You know, they're required to do that. We don't do that here. And it's like, okay.
We do that here. That's
we have a plan?
That's our OMAZE.
venue, and they are very good at that. And they
Yeah, the district's more underground and drainage. Yeah. I mean, some of that is no, surface.
You're right, Randy.
We just need to have guidelines as to how we want things done that we can point to and say, this is what we want. This is the district's code or guidelines. So that way that there is no back and forth between developer, engineer, and the district. It's just, it's in black and white, it's in writing, and this is sure. what we want.
So you're all in favor of this, you're behind this?
Yes, sir.
So we can move this to the board?
That's staff recommendation, yes.
As the recommendation of this committee?
Yes, sir.
So my second question is about what Travis just said. If we go through this, Joe, and we adopt it at the board level as an ordinance, can we hold the developers to that? And will the county recognize our authority to hold the developers? Because there seems to be a lot of finger pointing.
There won't be finger pointing because the county has already absolved themselves from anything having to do with stormwater quality because we're the MS4 permit holder.
Okay.
And it's our responsibility to do it, and enforce it and direct development. The county has the authority on roadways and grading plans to make sure that they're going to function correctly. And we work together with them often because we see things that they don't see it, and they don't always come out and watch things very closely when they, especially stormwater quality, they won't. They'll just say, you guys deal with it. So that's us.
Randy, let's put this off another month. Corey has some, did some investigation and did some research yesterday on Amelia's direction, and he has some stuff, and he has some questions that he wants to get with Joe about. Can we sure. just move this to next month?
And that's going to change the Joe's estimate.
By
an hour.
Well, that's
okay. No. That's part fine. Of the this, part this of the is, process is to work a, with.
This is not a hot item.
No.
And if you need more time to get it right.
Corey did some investigating last night, and he just reminded me of emails that he sent. Let's put this off a month.
Corey was a busy guy last night.
Yes, he was.
Boy. Part of the process is to work with Corey especially. Yeah.
So if you're okay with it, let's move it to next month, and if we're ready, we can bring this back.
I would agree with that, and I think that's kind of how we should do business, is we should get it right the first time rather than, oh, yeah, let's do this. And it's like, I know Joe likes the work, but it's like we're like, yeah, let's spend $50,000 and have Joe do this. And then the next month we're like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that. And it's like, I mean, this is not the Joe Lifetime Employment Committee.
No.
As much as we like you, Joe.
If Corey's still got questions about it, okay. I would rather put it off.
We're going to continue this item until next month till we refine our solution to the board.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next item, the manganese flare-up causes and solutions. So on the 19th,
must have been June.
Yeah, so let me get my paperwork together here real quick, sorry. Yeah. On the 19th of last month, the district had a manganese flare-up. I got a text from one of my staff that we were having unusual high levels of manganese coming in and leaving the water plant. We came in, we started to do some testing. this was not something that was going to be easily taken care of within a few minutes. So we also did in-house testing on what was coming out of the plant and what was going into the distribution system and the storage tanks. We tested the in-house tested the manganese level at the storage tanks, and they were still well below the 0.05 MCL. So because this was not something that was going to get taken care of right away, I had made the decision, and I called Amelia and told her that we needed to, that I was going to be putting the plant to waste until we got this taken care of. And out of a overabundance of precaution, I asked her to send out a notification to residents based on the, we had hit 0.04 in Van Fleck tank. Rio Oso tank stayed non-detect pretty much the whole time. But due to the new reporting guidelines that are that were set forth by the state July 1st, we did not hit anything that was reportable, but out of an abundance of caution, I wanted to send that out. So the notice was sent out. To for anyone that it was mainly for people who were had babies that were on formula to use bottled water or the elderly for that. I might have jumped the gun on that, but my concern is always for the residents versus versus the, you know, people thinking bad of me. And trust me, there are people out there that do. But that's neither here nor there. So I wanted to give a little background. Well, actually, that'll be for the next one. We did get, during that flare-up, we started to, staff started to do things that we would normally do to take care of this problem. That week we had 100 degree weather for multiple days. So what I was doing as a precautionary measure was I was sending samples to the lab on a 2-day return, because that's the quickest we can get them back, to find out what our what the difference between our dissolved manganese and our total manganese. Because we will feed a chemical called potassium permanganate that will react and oxidize the dissolved manganese, so that way the membranes can pick it up. But every result I kept getting back showed non-detect of dissolved manganese. So I can't feed a chemical into the water that's not going to react with anything, because then it goes into the system, and with potassium permanganate, it could turn the water pink. Or purple.
So brown or purple?
No, no. So it's one of those things that I, based on the lab information that I had, we were doing the right thing. The flare up that night got the highest influent that we got based on our in-house testing was a 0.34, which is extremely high.
What's the maximum?
0.05 on the effluent. Okay, these are two different numbers. So we started to feed chemical at the front end, and I had also contacted Joe because I needed to speak to a chemical engineer, because based on lab results and in-house testing, what we were supposed to do wouldn't have been the right thing. And so instead of potentially making things worse, I reached out, and Joe put me in contact with a gentleman, a chemical engineer that he contracts with. And I spoke with him, and I told him what I was doing and, you know, what direction we were going. He says, you're on the right path,
you got to get more aggressive with it. So we ended up turning on the potassium permanganate along with the chlorine that we were feeding, and we were able to start showing a positive effect. And around midnight, we were under control on the water going coming out of the water plant. So I let Amelia know, but she had asked me if she wanted to rescind the notice, and I did not want to do that at that time. I wanted to monitor to make sure that that the direction we took was not just a temporary thing, but that it was the right thing, because any change that we make with plant one, it takes a minimum of an hour to find out if that change created a positive or a negative effect. Because we can only, when you flush plant one, it has to come out of a hydrant, so we can only run like 700 gallons a minute. So I had asked her to not do that yet until we made sure that enough time had passed from our last adjustment to make sure everything was good. I don't remember the exact time. It was 7, 8 o'clock in the morning when I was finally comfortable enough and asked Amelia to go ahead and resend the order. One of the things that has come out of this is we got a... I spoke with the chemical engineer that helped us, and one of the things that we need to do is we need an action plan of what we're going to do, because with the thing with potassium permanganate is potassium permanganate shows up on a meter as manganese, our in-house meter. It shows up. So when you get when you get more coming in, if you raise your potassium permanganate, but yet it's still going up, well, is that from the potassium permanganate or is that from the manganese? And then you've got, so you've got to make adjustments. Where we can tell if that adjustment is correct is after it goes through the membranes and into a sample spot, and that's a good 45 minutes from the time it comes in, from the time it gets the adjustment. So a lot of times it's a guessing game, and it's not a good way to do it. So I asked the KSN, I think is the name. I asked Joe to have KSN come out and take a look at our water facility, so he can actually get a visual of what we have available, what our pretreatment or lack of pretreatment is, and contact time with chemical on where we introduce it into where it hits the membranes. I asked him to give me a proposal to do a study to give me an idea of what my options are when we have an issue like that, because this happens every year. It's an every year thing. Sometimes it's not as bad. Sometimes it's astronomically bad. And so we need, part of this study not only is to make recommendations with our current configuration on what we can do, but also any other configurations that might be helpful, but also to put an emergency action plan together, because if I'm not available, it's something that staff can look at and go, all right, this is what we have, this is the direction we need to go and do that. I got that
back from Domenichelli and Associates yesterday. That's why it was not in the packet. I would like to move this to the board for either a discussion or an approval, so that we can get this moving forward and get an action plan together, so we don't have these problems again.
Well, we know how to actively
take care of these problems, but also to get some recommendations from somebody smarter than me.
So you have a fully completed proposal, Travis?
Yes.
From Joe?
Yes. It was from the KSN. It's a fully completed proposal. It was $120,000.
But you didn't?
I thought it was $99,000.
Well, but then there's that was from KSN, and then there is Joe's
$10,000.
Yeah. So
a couple of things. First of all,
$10,000 to work under you,
to be a subtrust. We've done that arrangement before. When they want information, we can help get it for them. You'll see some of their rates are pretty high compared to ours, so, you know, if there's something that needs to be figured out or planned.
Senior engineer at $270 an hour.
That's pretty high.
I'll go back and rethink my career choice.
Yeah, what you'll find is the firms that do this type of work, you know, the district has dealt with them, the HDRs and the CH2, you know, they're all expensive. These guys are also the person who helped out Travis, you know, that evening, and he's one of the principals, so he's fairly expensive also. But his crews, as you see on this spreadsheet, you know, they're relatively higher than of course our small company. But if we've gone out and talked to the HDRs and others at different locations up in Tahoe Keys and water treatment facilities to keep the lake from being polluted, pretty intense scrutiny and also difficult treatment processes, and these guys have been really good. And so that's who we recommended. And
I'm sure that they're good, and you know, your recommendation is duly noted, but for us to spend $100,000 on a manganese action plan, we gotta have a secondary pricing on it, just for our own for us to be comfortable. I don't know how we could single source this.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing as Randy. It's like, you know, we need to, you know, look at the whole scope of it, especially, are we still on item D, or are you
haven't gone to item E?
Yeah. That's kind of the punchline here.
Right.
This is the setup. But as far as this item is concerned, I agree with Randy. We need, before we go to the board, we need to get past a full understanding of where we're going and, you know, what the treatment options are. And I mean, included in that, Travis, you said earlier that your meter doesn't do a great job because it'll track the permanganate along with the manganese, and you got to kind of interpret, and there's a lag and a Ouija board. And I mean, can we get a better meter?
Not how we're currently set up, we can't, because we've looked. There are meters that you can get, and I'm sure the setup that we'd have to do can be engineered to make it work. I think the last time we looked at these meters, they were close to $50,000, but they would give us instant reads. That was 4 or 5 years ago when we brought this up, and I'm sure technology's, I'm hoping technology's gotten better. And I can, and we can go ahead and look into what's out there to do that, because it's one of those continuous online meters versus a handheld one that you're taking a sample and.
So you get an app for it.
Yeah. So yeah. And
so when you're in Thailand, you can call and tell us what's going on.
Pretty much. Yes.
Perfect.
So
I wanted to just make 2 points. First of all, Travis, as always, was on top of this. He was there. He was out here. I'm sure you were out here for the whole 24 hours, 36 hours that it took to resolve this situation. And I think that you were 100% right in sending out the code red when you did, because alerting the community that there's a potential that their water might need to be shut off and turn, you know, use bottled water for a couple of days. They would rather know that than take a chance. So I think that you acted remarkably. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. I also want to thank my staff that was there, because they did a great job also.
Okay. So barring further comments, I think we'll table direction on this until you get through item E. We'll try to roll it all into one. But certainly part of it is, as Randy and I both said, we got to have more thought before we spend $100,000 on somebody telling us what to do.
That's fine.
Okay.
Okay. So then I want to move to item E, and I want to open discussion about the future viability of our current Plant One membrane plant. This plant was, I did a background, I did a write-up on this, and that gives the background in the history of Water Treatment Plant 1 and the water treatment plants. When I started here in 2009, we had two water treatment plants. We had Plant 1, they were both conventional treatment plants. Plant 1 was a 1.5 million gallon a day plant, and Plant 2 was a 2 million gallon a day plant. We never had an issue with manganese in any way, shape, or form. It was not something that was on the radar, not something we had a problem with, because a conventional treatment plant has enough, more than enough contact time with chemical to remove the manganese in the said basins. Plant two, our effluent manganese is pretty much a non-detect all year round. And so the, I was just an operator at the time. I don't know, the discussions on why we went to a membrane plant, what kind of studies were done or anything. So I can't speak to any of that. What I can speak to now, after running these plants for the amount of time that I have, is that in my opinion, with a membrane plant is not okay for the setup that we have. We don't have any pretreatment. We don't have much contact time with the chemical. The manganese or the chemical, because they, you know, stain our membranes to the point that we can't even do repairs on them. I'm going to, here within the next couple of days, spend almost $900,000 to replace two trains of membranes. Pardon me?
How many trains do we have?
We have three trains. We replaced train one last year. And we're going to, because of the failure rate that's going on right now and our lack of being able to do repairs on ones that are failure because of the staining, we're replacing both trains and membranes. The cost of the chemicals to clean the membranes, the cost of staff to do repairs, I have two staff that do the repairs two days a week, every week. The cost of having the manganese flare-ups. The reason why I'm going through all this, because I want to open discussion. I firmly believe that we need to get rid of Plant One. We need to demolish it, and we need to replace it with a conventional treatment plant.
We can't just take out the membranes and add back in the conventional, which is what I understand. In 2015, they kind of left the building there and they
swapped
it out.
So I mean, they can remove all of the. They can remove all of the stuff, but there's still a lot of construction because where the filter was, they actually put a floor there and made it a contact chamber. Where the said basins were, that's where all the filters are at. I know that I don't even have any idea of what cost wise would be or anything. I haven't spent any time on this. Because I don't want to go to somebody and say, hey, what's it going to cost, or do this, do that, without at least opening up, bringing here and seeing if this is worth having a discussion. If we were to remove the membrane plant and put in a conventional treatment plant, over the next 30 years... we'd have to do a cost analysis, but because the rising cost of chemicals, the rising cost of membranes, versus okay, you got to replace a motor for a flocculator, or the media on plant two, we replaced that last year, and that was the first time it was replaced in 25 years. So And to me, this is important. The safety of the water that we are supplying to the residents is paramount. The membrane plant does provide good water. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it doesn't remove the manganese because of the way that the plant was built. We have no pretreatment. I feel that I would not be doing my job if I did not at least bring this to the committee to open up a conversation and then go from there. What I would like to do is I would like to make this a discussion item with the board, not an act, but to at least open up the conversation and go from there. But this is my first step. And I wanted to go from there.
So before we completely demolish and rebuild that plant, are there pretreatment options? I thought that I'd heard about adding a sed basin in so that the water has a chance to meet up with the chemicals and have the reaction before it goes through the membranes.
So one of the things that we would have to do is we do not have the real estate where that plant is to add anything. And we also have, if you put any kind of pretreatment on the other side of the creek that goes down into Clementia, you have no way of removing the sludge or whatever unless you're putting in another drying bed over there. And then you have to run pipes so that can run back to the front end. So I'm not saying something can't be designed, but we don't have the real estate as it sits right now. Could that be
Could we buy the lot next to the water plant? I don't know. I don't even know who owns that. I'm going to presume Rancho North does, but I don't know. I don't know if that's a discussion. So could, if we put in the right amount of pretreatment time, absolutely it could work. I mean, South San Joaquin has membranes just like ours, but they have multiple DAFs, multiple sed basins, everything that removes all of the bad stuff before it even hits the membranes. So there are multiple things that we can do. And that's kind of why I wanted to get open a discussion.
Travis, my first question is, I mean, this $1 million that you spoke about earlier for the two additional trains, how long can we postpone that for?
Oh, we can't. I need to order those because I am literally fighting every week because, so we base all that on TMPs, pressure, and LRV, which is log removal value that the state has set. And once we get down to a certain number, we have to do repairs. And our repairs are barely moving us up, and we're skating the four. And so we need to do this. I mean, we can piecemeal it. We can continue to piecemeal. Like, I just bought 15 membranes.
Right.
And we're no longer in our honeymoon phase with the Veolia where we're getting things at $1,000. They're now $1,800 a module. We have to pay to have them refrigerated, you know, shipped in a temperature control vehicle because they have to be at temperature control. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, if we wanted to, we could piecemeal over the next year. I don't recommend it, but it's an option.
If piecemealing saved, I mean, because if we spend $1 million, that does us for how long?
Well, that would have all of our membranes. They say the membranes last 10 years. They don't here because of the staining.
Yeah.
5, 6?
Yeah. And if it takes us a year to come up with a final plan and have Joe draw it up in a year to implement it, then we're still not even halfway through their reduced lifespan.
We can continue to piecemeal.
I'm just throwing it out there.
And I understand that. I don't. And I know this is coming at the worst time because I asked to buy membranes.
I know.
It
comes across like, yeah, we're going to spend $1 million and we're going to throw them away next year.
No. Well,
thank you.
So, yeah. But part of that money also is replacing the HMI brain that actually runs all these because that is out of its life cycle. So if the committee or the board was to say, you know what, we're going to, over the next 6-8 months, have a serious discussion on this, do what you can to keep us running without buying the modules, then fine. I'll do what we have to do. I'll get some, you know, I'll order another 15 or so and or find out what I need to run us through. I can do that.
Just for the sake of the audience, I mean, Travis and I have talked about this quite a few times because I think having the manganese in the water is just terrible. I mean, it's atrocious. It's not the quality that we should be providing. We should not have residents going, crappy brown water, oh, go buy bottled water. That's not where we should be. We should be providing them the best water we can. And the state is on us about the importance of, they're moving up a notch on their list of things to remove from water. And the cost of filters are going up. And because of the filter and the type of water we have, the lifespan is going down. I mean, everything points to us fixing the problem by going back to a conventional treatment plant. So I think that what we need to do is to figure out over the next couple of 3 months, you know, we'll have meetings on it. We need to discuss all the options because, I mean, if we if we took the filters, you know, right now, I don't have the notes in front of me, but, you know, if you add together plant one and plant two and we took the filters out, how many million gallons a day could that do? And would that suffice for our proposed, our projected total buildout? And it seems like it would. If we're doing 2.2 million gallons on a summer day now, and you look at the, historically, the plants were doing 3.5, but then we rebuilt one of them. It's like, what'll they do now if we take the filters out?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have an idea on that?
Well, so the projected demand, or what the plants were built out to, were built to for built for complete build out. If every lot and everything, it was 6 million gallons. So plant two was built for 4, and plant two is 6. Plant one can technically do 6 million if we add the fourth train, but we would have to take plant two offline because we would need that contact chamber. I don't in any way, shape, or form ever recommend doing that. But that is a that's conversation for different. But I also know that full build out has been reduced. But I don't know if that is a permanent forever reduction. So I don't know, and this would be a conversation. Do we need to, if we were to put in a conventional, do we still need to make it for a capability of 4 million gallons? And that would be part of the discussion. I do know that where the solar field is for the water plant, there's actually a pipe that leads to the corner. That area was going to be a conventional plant three. Obviously the solar fields are there, and with technology these days, the area that's there right now, I don't know to what extent that it can produce water. I've asked Joe that if we're going to go this direction or look at this, if this is something that he would be able to do, and I won't speak for Joe on that, but I'm not asking anybody to do anything until if I find out if this is even a viable direction to go. So that's my bombshell for this morning. And I forward it to you guys.
No, Travis, it's not really a bombshell. I mean, I really appreciate it. And this is, you know, I mean, the improvements committee is supposed to have a long-range view of things and to pragmatically, methodically go through the options and find actual solutions. So I think that we should, I didn't say spend $1 million, I didn't even say spend 40 grand. We should continue with, you know, you and Corey and Amelia, we should be refining our proposals, and we should have, you know, at least pencil drawings on a napkin that we can show the board and say, you know, this looks good, that looks good, what do you think about that? And then we can hire Joe to make it look good. But I don't know, Randy, where are you at on this?
I don't. My gut tells me that we're going to spend the $900,000 because just to get this thing off the ground, if we decide to do it, to get the thing off the ground and going and find the financing and get plans and so on and so forth, we're going to be 5 years down the road before this proposed plan is up and running. But just to keep the discussion going, I'd like for you to address two things. One was the membranes were sold to us as the greatest and latest, purest water was going to come out of that plant. And we were on top of it. We were ahead of the curve. And now we're saying, well, it doesn't really take care of the manganese, so we're going to go backwards. And the second thing I'd like you to address is there was a thought a few years ago that of possibly turning plant one into pretreatment and taking, or plant two into pretreatment, and then moving that water through the membranes, and that would take care of the manganese.
So, yes, that was one of the, because a couple of years ago, Daryl, one of Joe's employees, they came out, we looked at that, and yes, that was an option, and because, yes, we can mothball plant two and turn all of that into pretreatment with some construction. The and before we would do that, I would, you know, obviously like to do a study. But where that comes into a potential issue, this is just, is if plant one, let's say we had a failure, and I'm a glass half empty kind of guy, and I always think the worst is going to happen. But if plant one was to go down because it is almost all automated, we at least have plant two that if we had to, that can put out 2 million gallons. And if we had to, if it was in the middle of the summer, we could send out alert, hey, you know, slow down the you know, your usage while we get something fixed. Everything that plant all parts for plant one come from Hungary, there and Canada, so I have on the shelf certain things that, you know, if something goes down, we can put it back up. But I myself would be remiss to completely demolish plant two. I'm not saying, I mean, I know that there's other facilities that have just one facility, you know, and they make it work. And I'm not saying we couldn't make it work. We would, you know, if we went down that direction, then I would make sure, you know, they gave us a 3-page list of critical things that we should have on the shelf just in case, and we could go that direction. So that, yes, that is something that was talked about, and we can follow that train of thought as a possible thing to do also.
Well, my first thing was this idea that the membranes are like the greatest
right
thing in the industry for putting out a clean water. Are we finding that it's not that the juice isn't worth the squeeze, so to speak?
Well, it does do a really good job on our overall water quality. It does. It just does not remove for our particular setup, because we don't have iron in, we don't have any iron in our water or in our lakes. Our problem is manganese. I don't know if that was discussed when the thought process was to have membranes. I don't know who made the decision to do the membranes, what the salesman said, what was looked at. So I can't speak to any of that. It does produce good water. It doesn't do, you know, better than bottled water, that which was boasted by somebody. But it does produce good water. Just it does. There's the one main thing that it just does not do for us. And maybe the manganese wasn't even brought up because it was never thought of, because we never had a problem. I don't know about any of that
stuff. So, you know, the proposal that Randy just talked about, we talked about, you know, a while back, but it doesn't eliminate kind of the fatal flaw that we're still tied to the filters and the cost of the filters and the availability and the lifespan of the filters.
So here's, and here's where the question that I would have. If we had the pretreatment, would the filters last longer?
That's a good question.
Because we wouldn't have the staining. So, you know, obviously you have to, South San Joaquin, they have a night shift that all they do every night is pull trains and repairs. They have 15 trains. We have three. But they have to do repairs, and they have a team that's all they do every night is pull and repairs. But I don't know how long theirs last. And if we had the proper pretreatment, could ours last the projected 10 years that they say? I couldn't give you that answer because I don't know. Whenever we've had somebody from, because in 2019 when we had the brown water in the system for 2 weeks, Veolia sent out a chemical engineer, and his response was, just turn the potassium permanganate up until it's pink coming in and then turn it back a little bit. Well, I'm just not going to do that. I'm sorry. That's just not something I'm going to do. I don't know. I do know it does produce good water. It just, there's parts that it's not working for us based on the way it was built right now.
So if you tested the water coming out of plant one versus plant two separately, what's the difference in water quality?
You do get a little bit, you will get a better TOC removal out of plant one, which is one of our main things that we want to remove. The turbidity is better.
Is TOC the same as TDS?
No. TOCs are organics.
Okay.
that the microorganisms, all the stuff that we need to remove from the water. It does do a good job. And I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying with our manganese issue, it overshadows all of that.
But plant one may be a little better because it's actually doing a filtration rather than just the chemical mixing.
You know what? To be absolutely honest with you, I would put plant two conventional up against this membrane plant any day of the week. It's just the water is perfectly fine. It sufficed. It well exceeds the standards that are set for every constituent that we have to remove. Well exceeds it, and the maintenance, the lack of maintenance that needs to be done, the lack of time, the lack of chemicals, to me, for how we have it set up, it's just better.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's my...
That's your report?
That's my report on that, sir.
What do you think, Randy?
I think we've got a public comment.
We do. Jeff.
Oh.
Jeff Pearson, Rancho North. Travis, I don't know if it's the same area, but remember when you and Amelia were over at our offices talking about tank locations? We suggested that the village or the district had an opportunity for our old Village G. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to see how far Village G came around.
It goes all the way to your plant.
Does it go on the other side? If you're looking at the plant in the front, it would be all the way on the left side, because that would be where we would have to have. Where's our plant? Our plant is right here. So this area right here would be, because we would have to move out, because this is the area where we would have to put something. So we would need that right there. So.
Yeah. I think it does. I can check for you.
Okay.
I can check. You know, the whole thing is Lot 11 now. We've taken the villages off the development application process, but, you know, it was always our thought that would be a great place for the district to expand. But I can certainly check for you.
Okay. Yeah. We would have to have a lot or two or acre or two or whatever, depending on what is in that area.
We have about 20, I think, in that one that we were suggesting. But I'll find out.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any further discussion on that? My question, so the main thing is obviously, am I going to move forward with the purchase of the membranes that were approved? I'm actually getting that price down because that quote we're actually going to be needing less, so that quote will be coming down a little bit, hopefully. But am I moving forward with the purchase of those membranes? And then second of all, and this can be, that answer can potentially come if, you know, do we want to move this to the board for a discussion, or do we want to further look into it here before we do that?
I think it's a two-part thing. I think that spending $1 million on the filters, I think we probably should do it, because this is going to be a 2-3-4 year process. Even if everything goes well, we got to acquire land, move the solar field, change things around. I mean, that's not easy.
You mean we can't do that by next week?
Well, yeah. If we were Elon Musk and we owned everything.
Joe's a miracle worker.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I don't want to spend $1 million, but maybe what we could move to the board is the question of, do we buy the $1 million or do we buy, I don't know what a piecemeal is, 100 grand? The second part of it is, I think that we should, at the improvements committee and at the staff level, I think that we should definitely come up with this is a plan, even if we have three of them and say we can do A, B, or C, because we're looking at it, we're asking the right questions, we have the vision of what the obstacles are, and so we need to come up with viable alternatives to propose before we propose a solution. We can't go to the board and go, hey, what do you guys think? And there's still 100 loose ends.
Okay. So then part M of this area. I don't know if some of those questions were going to potentially be answered by the chemical engineer's evaluation, or can I get a task order from Joe to start looking at what all my options are, pre-treatment wise versus, but also a cost analysis versus over the next 30 years versus keeping what we got versus putting in a conventional versus buying land, adding pre-treatment, because if we're gonna look into that, then we need to
let's have a process to form the questions to ask Joe.
Okay.
Rather than just saying, Joe, what do you think? Because we need to.
We need to give him direction before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's. I mean. All right. Joe's smiling.
You mean, because Joe has told me before he can read my mind. Yes. So, no. Okay. So then what I will do is, if you're okay with it, I can get this together and I can bring this to the next improvements committee.
I like what you just said, Travis. You had three options there. We can hash this out forever and probably not change what you just said. And eventually we got to hand it to Joe and say, Joe, what are these three options going to cost us, and what are the pluses and minuses of each of them? In the meantime, how long do you have before you need to make that decision on how many membranes?
Well, if we want to get them by December,
because that's when we would be doing the work, when plant one's down for maintenance. When I talked to him yesterday, I said, hey, if I order these within the next couple of weeks, can I get all 200 and something by December, maybe January? He goes, that should be possible. I can find out from him, but when we just ordered one train worth, it took us like 5 months to get them, because they don't hold that many in Canada, so they have to actually order them from Hungary. In Canada, they keep some amount, like if when you're buying 15 or 20 of them, but when you're buying them in bulk sets like that, they have to get them from
Hungary. How many filters are in one train?
So there's 96 per train, and there's two trains.
Okay, so we're looking at a couple hundred trains, filters total.
Right. So it's I can call him because he's having to redo the quote for some things that I wanted removed, to make sure. So he's redoing the quote. I will find out what he found out about getting him here, because if I don't do it by January, then I'm pretty much screwed, because I've got to have them plant one back up by the end of January to pretend to do whatever maintenance we have to do on plant two.
What's your recommendation?
My recommendation is we need to get the membranes. We have to buy them. And I would like to buy them so we can get it done, especially since no matter what the board decides, it's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen in 2 years or 3 years. And please don't take this the wrong way when I make the statement, but I'm sick of band-aiding. And that's all we're doing. That's all we would be doing. And it's just not. I have a lot of other stuff that my staff could be doing instead of doing repairs. It was an approved CIP, and even though we've had this issue and I brought this up, yeah, in a perfect world we would have had this issue before, but we didn't. We need to move forward.
Well, that's an interesting comment. It's an approved CIP. Is there anything more that we or the board needs to do for you
No, I just didn't want to actually physically place the order until we've had this conversation. Not that it would make a difference, but it was just I waited till we had the conversation with the committee,
yeah.
And then especially since looking at that, and I spoke to him, I made some changes to get it requoted. But once I get that, I
but just that'll be like so. What? So you're talking next week or two?
Probably. I'm hoping probably about a week I'll have that requote.
So, I think that we're all in agreement. We're probably going to end up biting the bullet and buying $1 million worth of filters. We may end up taking them out of service when they have been used for 3 years rather than five, or six, or whatever their lifespan is. I think we should, maybe as an information or an affirmation item, we just tell the board that we're going ahead with a purchase, or we can just go ahead and do it, because the board approval has been given. You don't need anybody else's approval. You could do it.
No, I was just told to, when I buy them,
yeah.
I've got to have Amelia sign the contract, and that to just put it in the consent calendar to the board that it was purchased.
There you go.
So.
Okay. So we're going to put that on the consent calendar to buy the filters as previously approved, and we're going to continue, before we hire Joe to come up with a final idea, we're going to give him our own kind of back of the envelope ideas of which way these options should go, and we'll refine that, staff can refine that, and improvements committee can decide on that maybe next month if we don't have any more big hurdles?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Okay. Moving on, item F.
This is just an update on the MEC culvert repair project. It did start July 1st, and based on the information that I just got from Joe this morning, that everything is moving, is progressing per the timeline, and everything's looking good. If you don't have any questions about that, that's my report.
Okay. Comments and suggestions?
I've got two items. One, Corey, great job on the research on the easements. Travis, great job on the manganese situation.
Thank you.
Probably more information there than is able to digest in one sitting, but obviously you've done a lot of work on it and it's appreciated. Second comment is about the first discussion that we had at the start of the meeting. Adamant that anything having to do with what the Working Vision Group has been working on has to go through this committee, be in this committee. I'm not really sure what the intent there was, but how do we do that and then not have an agenda item for anything having to do with the water vision? I don't know how to describe all of the water issues, but just for simplicity to say the water vision. It's got to be an agenda item on every improvements committee because it's at the top of the list of things that the community services district should be working on, in my opinion.
Well, I'll answer that, Randy. I mean, there was no malice and no sneaky shifting of the agenda. Amelia has placeholders on the agenda, and Lisa and Jim didn't have anything to report on, and maybe it was a miscommunication, or maybe there's nothing done, but we didn't have any packet to put on there, so we said, okay, because we don't want to put items continually on the, that's a big problem that I think the board has, is that we get these reports every month. It's like, you know, Brandon will sit there, 14 white cars came through the gate. It's like, that's not, you know, we need to pare it down and focus our discussions, and that was the intent.
How do we make progress if we never do anything? That's been my complaint all along, is, yeah, well, we don't have anything to talk about. Well, that doesn't move the ball forward. That's more of the same of what plagues us.
If we had
not making any progress on some of the biggest issues that we have.
So if we'd had that item on there, who would have said what?
We would have been discussing the matrix and who's going to do what and moving all of those issues forward.
I've seen no new matrix other than the one we looked at 2 months ago when you objected to the font size. That was the last I've seen of it. And, you know, my comments are, I would like to say thank you to staff. I think that things are kind of, we're really elevating the level of discussion. Thank you to Corey for, you must have been up till midnight the other night looking things up. And thank you to Travis for illuminating the issues. And thank you, Joe, for showing up and giving us your professional opinion, because you are the professional in the room. And Diane and Amelia, you guys rock.
Professional board member.
Professional civil engineer, licensed for 40 years.
Professional-ish.
Okay, so, all right. With that said, this meeting is adjourned.
All pages. Thank you, gentlemen.